This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Okay, I know it might come as a big surprise, but not all therapists are evil. In fact, now more than ever, there are accessible, effective ways to work on yourself, whether it's dealing with stress, anxiety, or just getting closer to achieving your goals. That's where BetterHelp Therapy comes in. With access to licensed professional therapy from the comfort of your own space, BetterHelp lets you, and yes, I mean you, make the progress you've always been wanting to make. Its online service is intentionally designed to be extremely accommodating, so no matter the stage of life you're in or where you are in the world, BetterHelp can be a great resource. BetterHelp allows you to set your own preferences, anything from type of therapy to therapist specializations, and they will match you with a therapist that best fits what you're looking for. But don't worry if you don't feel satisfied with the first therapist you're matched with. BetterHelp offers you the option to switch if you don't get that perfect fit on the first try. Want weekly meetings on BetterHelp's secure platform? They got you covered. Looking for the option to message your counselor 24/7? No problem. Whatever you're working towards, BetterHelp can, well, help. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and listeners of The Eyes get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/theeyes. That's betterhelp.com/theeyes. Thank you for listening. Let's get to the show. I backed the van up to the front of the building and pressed the button to open the doors. Then, I took the phone book that was kept in the glove compartment and opened my door. I could see Jeanette the receptionist get up from her desk and walk towards me. Without hesitating, I shifted the van into reverse and dropped the book on the gas pedal. I jumped out as it lurched back, crashing into the front window and making a way for the pigs to make absolute chaos in the wreckage of the entrance. I didn't stick around to see though, I sprinted around to the side of the building where Kara was waiting. We opened up the secret in-ground doorway and jumped through the passage, sprinting to reach the crates where we would hide and wait to get in. We were right. The distraction worked. As we crouched in silence, we could hear the thick metal doors clank open, and then 10 or 15 guards and scientists rushed out to repair the destruction. As the stream of people stopped, we carefully stood up. My knees almost gave out from the nervousness, and my hands shook as we ran through the slowly closing door. It worked. We were in. After the waves of security guards and scientists had passed, me and Kara slipped through the door and into the first room, a hallway lined with four closets on each side. The room was like Kara's brothers had described. The walls were painted a blinding white and we could see another thick metal door at the end of the hallway, but we wasted no time in taking it all in. We split up to look for the camera. I ran into a room on the right, and Kara tried to open a closet on the left, but moved onto the second one when the door wouldn't open. Just as I closed my door, I could hear two sets of footsteps run towards the exit. Two security guards. I hoped that Kara had gotten into a room in time. The room I was in held nothing but old machinery and empty crates. It was small, so I was able to comb through everything as fast as I could. Nothing. I wasted no time and moved to the next room as soon as I knew the hallway was clear. Kara was still in her first room, but as I opened my door, she ran out of hers. "Nothing?" I whispered. "Nothing," she responded, sprinting into the next room. The next closet was completely empty, except for piles of old cloth. Again, nothing. We were running out of time. The next room was also full of crates, this time holding old journals and files. As I was looking around the corners of the room, the doorknob started to open. I crouched behind one of the larger crates, my heart skipping a beat. And then I heard a voice, and I was immediately flush with relief. "I found it," Kara whispered. "Let's get out of here." I sprung up and jumped over the old musty crates. We ran into the hallway and back towards the exit. And then I realized something. The doors to the exit were opening. And behind them, the guards were rushing to get back in. We had nowhere to go but back. Back even further, into the lab Kara's brothers had gone into. Maybe, just maybe, there would be a way out. I heard Isabel yelling to secure the facility and the guards scrambling to get into the lab. I sprinted around the corner, my heart beating out of my chest. Kara followed close behind, the precious camera swinging around her shoulders. We tried to be silent, but there was no way they didn't hear us. We could hear Isabel, the scientists, the security guards, and probably Doc now running toward us from around the corner. It was only a matter of time until we were caught. We ran as far and as fast as we could until we hit the door to the pig room. Without looking back, I ran myself into the door. I staggered back as the door stood unchanged. Kara tried a different approach and pulled on the handle. It was open. Her brothers were right. We were hit by a wave of stench that was exactly the same as the smell of the bodies in the coroner's office the first day. It was rancid, but we pushed ourselves through and ventured deeper into the lab. The room was more or less what I had imagined. 20 or so glass panes lined the hallway, and there were giant vats of that black tar hanging over the walkway. We ran down the line. Some cells were packed full of pigs, and others had scientists studying graphs and meters or other pigs. We thought we ran fast enough to dodge the attention of the scientists. But as soon as one saw us, we knew we had no chance. Three of them burst from a cell, and others followed, matching our pace as we flew down the hallway. The hallway was longer than it looked. We ran a good 30 seconds until we reached a bend in the corridor. We were making up ground. If there was another exit on the other side, instead of a wall, we thought we could make it out. We could hear Isabel shouting at her staff as they tried to catch up. We turned the corner, and, miraculously, there was another door. Big, metal, and looming, but it meant that there was a way out. We had hope. We ran past more pigs and cells until we reached the door. Against all odds, the door seemed to have no lock on it. We were free. Or so we thought. Kara reached the door first and looked around for a handle of some kind. Apparently, our luck had run out, because not only was there no lock, but there was no doorknob. No handle, nothing to open it. We looked around, prosperity guards and scientists just around the corner, when Kara found a button. Without thinking, she pressed it, and many things happened at once. Alarms began to blare around us, but over the screeching, we could hear the inner workings of the door start to shift. It was opening. A panel on the wall lit up, and a timer set for 5 minutes started. 5 minutes to open the door. It wasn't going to be fast enough. The door started to creak open, but it was too late. In all of our hopes, we turned around, and the scientist had finally rounded the corner. Isabel rushed toward us, and the guards followed, tasers drawn. I wasn't paying attention to any of this, though, because from behind Isabel charged a man in a police uniform. Only it wasn't Doc. It was Chief. As soon as he met my eyes, he stopped in his tracks. Isabel saw me too for the first time and stopped, but instead of gaping, she smiled. The guard stopped behind her as Isabel began to walk towards us. Before she could speak, though, Chief stepped in front of her. "What are you doing here, Rick?" he asked, still in shock. I didn't even know how to answer him. "I was wrong this whole time," I said. "It wasn't Doc that was in with all of this. It was you. Why? Why are you working with these people? You can clearly see what they're doing. I don't even know the whole story, but I promise you there's more corruption going on than both of us can tell. There's nothing good going on here." Chief spoke. "Yes, there is, Rick. You just can't see it, but Prosperity's working on big things. They're dangerous, I know, but they're going to save even more lives than they're risking right now." "Explain all of this, then," I said. "What's happening here? With the pigs and good life and the murders? Tell me everything." I was stalling for the door. We had 4 minutes, 30 seconds left. But I also was interested. I wanted to know what was really going on. Isabel knew we weren't getting away. We were cornered. So, she began to talk. "Prosperity isn't just a rehab clinic. It's a research facility. It's in the name. It's an institute. And we're not the only one. There are dozens of Prosperity research institutions across the country. And we have a bigger mission than just curing illnesses. We're curing crime. We're curing violence. There are other projects at other facilities, but our research is the most viable out of all the other institutes."
What are you working on then that's so important that you take my brother's lives? Kara asked.
She was mad, I could tell.
It wasn't personal, Kara. You should know that, Isabel said. We're working on something bigger than your brothers. It's bigger than all of us.
What is it then? I asked. Isabel explained.
We've been working on a combination of chemicals and catalysts that enable us to calm or evoke certain emotions in the brain. Our goal is to introduce it into the population, so that on days when someone is too aggressive or dangerous, we'll be able to monitor and adjust chemical emotions in the body to neutralize the threat. Essentially, we are paving the way for real-world peace. The compound we're working on currently is called Series 3. When near certain catalysts, we're able to mostly control the subject's emotions. We're still at the point where the catalyst is a physical compound. We still need some way to physically trigger Series 3, and henceforth, the emotions, in the brain. That's where Pitch Black comes in. It's the stuff that you see in the vats above you, Isabel explained.
And what was on the bodies we found, Chief said. Isabel continued.
It doesn't work for all of our Series 3 subjects, just the pigs. When we expose them to Pitch Black, their olfactory neurons pick up the compounds and we're able to identify and neutralize their emotions. Or, in your brother's case, Isabel looked at Kara, we can use it to heighten emotions. You use the pigs to kill my brothers? Why couldn't you have just let them go?
Kara said, visibly angry. I was getting heated too.
That was out of the question. Even though our research will be implemented once it's finished, it's still mostly illegal and extremely experimental. We can't have people like you finding out about this. It would ruin years of hard work, Isabel explained.
Why did you use the pigs? I asked. If you want to control human emotions, why didn't you test Series 3 in humans?
We did, Isabel said. 3 years ago, we started this project with the intentions of only using volunteer patients as test subjects. We were naive then. We tested too early and lost our first subjects.
Her husband was one of them, said Chief.
They were lost in an accident. They escaped and their minds were too erratic to reason with us. We haven't been able to find them since, except for the patient on the news yesterday. And we couldn't risk that happening again. We needed brains similar to humans, though, and luckily we were only a few miles from hog territory. We injected some pigs with Series 3 to induce certain emotions so that they would be removed from the farmer's care, meaning we made them angry. We never intended for them to attack people, just destroy some property and be confiscated. We had to deal with good life, and if we got the pigs there, we'd be able to transfer them to our facility. We never thought the olfactory receptors would be quite so powerful in the pigs. So when they noticed compounds similar to Pitch Black near that girl, they couldn't help but attacking her.
By olfactory, you mean smelling, right? I asked. Isabel nodded.
The Pitch Black smells that bad for a reason. It's just to attract the attention of the patients. What was on that girl that was so similar to Pitch Black then? Kara asked. The compound that was easiest for us to use as a catalyst was corn syrup, of all things, Isabel said. We planned to make more obscure catalysts, but seeming as we had to make so much of it, it was more effective to use a cheap catalyst.
So the pigs attacked her because she had candy.
It was Halloween, right? How did you not expect that to happen? I asked.
We did as much as we could here, Isabel said.
That's why we ask if any of our patients have any food on them when they enter. We couldn't risk having an attack here, or else the whole operation would have gone down, Isabel explained. This is bigger than all of us, and we won't let just two lives get in the way. That's why we killed your brothers, and that's why we can't have you here either.
With that, the guards raised their weapons and started to move towards us. The clock was at 2 minutes, still counting down.
Chief, do something about this. We can't let this happen, I said. Too many people are paying too high a price. You have the power to stop this.
Chief thought for a moment, and then turned to Isabel. We can't just lock him up. Riley's a good kid. He'll do what we say.
Out of the question, Isabel insisted. We've had detainees escape before. We can't have that happen again.
I looked at Chief one last time before he was swallowed up by the mob of people. He was like a father to me, a dad when I had none. I was wrong about him, wrong about everything. He didn't care about me, even though he pretended to. He was done being the leader of a bland department in the middle of a bland landscape. He wanted to do more, even if that meant going against all he believed in and joining this corruption that was Prosperity Psychological Institute. But I made a different choice. It didn't matter if this was where my story ended. It didn't matter if this was where Kara's story ended too. We both did everything we could to find the truth. It wasn't enough to end it,
but it was enough for me to try. We backed up to the door, still only open 2 or 3 inches, the clock at 1 minute, and the guards continued to approach. One of them was holding one of those fire extinguisher things that held the canister of pitch black. Now I knew what it was for. And then I had an idea. I thought back to when we were driving the van and the pigs started to get angry. I reached into my pocket and pulled out the chocolate bar. If the pigs responded to corn syrup, maybe, just maybe, they would respond to this. The clock was at 30 seconds. Before any of the guards could react, I pulled off the wrapper and threw the chocolate into the mob. They watched in confusion as it landed in the middle of them, and then they realized what was happening. Too late, because the pigs that were packed into their glass prisons could finally break free. The vents in the bottom of the cells attracted all of the pigs, who began to ram at the glass panes and push their way out. One by one, the cells shattered, sending shards of glass into the crowd and angry pigs close behind. The guards and the scientists all screamed as they were trampled by the onslaught of dozens of pigs. Some ran off. I could see Isabel and Chief being chased, but they had no chance of escape. I secretly hoped that Chief would make it out alright, but we had no time to waste. The door was open about a foot or so, 20 seconds left on the timer, leaving us barely enough room to squeeze through. It was our only way out. Kara went first, then I followed, and I slipped by right as a pig started to chase us. It was too tight of a squeeze, though, and the pig turned around to attack the others in the last room. Me and Kara were now in a new room neither of us had seen before. It was a totally different design. There were cells, but they were made out of iron bars and not glass. It looked like a true prison. Why was it there? And then I remembered as we ran. This must have been the original testing area where the first subjects lived. It looked as if people had left in a hurry. The testing machines were scattered and broken, and the few pieces of furniture in the cells were on their side. But then we realized something. If this was the original testing site, there had to be an original door. That meant a way out. We ran through the hall, looking for any signs of an exit. It was a smaller hallway, and eventually we reached the end. There on the wall was an elevator with a singular button. Up. We didn't hesitate. Kara pressed the button, but no light indicated the direction of the elevator. Instead, a panel opened in the wall, revealing 9 small buttons engraved with numbers. There was a passcode. We were trapped. And then, a voice. To my left, behind the bars of a cell. It was deep and raspy, like someone with gravel in their mouth. It was almost indecipherable too, so I moved closer. He moved closer too, and I instantly regretted it. The girl in the interview was right. He had a smile like wet bread, and his eyes, fast and unfocused, like flies in a jar, trying to escape. This was the patient, one of the first subjects of Series 3. He tried to speak, but it was obvious he couldn't form words. But he must have come back to consciousness or some level of control, because then he held up a piece of paper. On it was written a 4-digit code, 7246. Somehow, despite his mind being completely destroyed by the experiments and the catalysts, he was able to come back. The original subjects weren't evil, or even gone for good. There was some way to restore them, and in thanks of that one inmate in that cell, I vowed to myself that after this case closed, I would search for a cure to the disease that came with Series 3. As we turned around, we could still hear the mayhem going on in the laboratory. The door was fully open, and we could see the carnage for ourselves. Some of the pigs were lying motionless on the ground. Others were chasing guards and scientists further down the hall. There were 2 guards still left fighting the pigs, and they both turned to run towards us. They were out of luck, though, because Kara entered the numbers, the elevator doors closed, and we started to move. We had survived. And with the camera, we could put this all to a screeching halt. A week later, headlines ran our story to the entire country. Institute of Psychology caught an animal abuse scandal. Assistant detective and sister of murder victims bring it to light. It was over. No more suffering of animals. No more pitch black, no more testing. At least, no more testing at this Prosperity Institute. As Isabel said, there were dozens of other institutes across the country, just under different names. If we wanted to keep this from happening again, someone would have to shut down these institutes. And there was still one question. Who was sending us those letters? After we escaped, I got into contact with Doc, who shared his side of the story. He was getting letters, but not the threatening ones. He was getting the same ones that I did.
He was on the right side of things. He wanted to help, but didn't know that Chief was in on it. That's why he was fired. After me and Kara reported this case to the news and the state government, there was an investigation held in my department. Chief was the only one in on the racket, thankfully. It was revealed that along with his support of the experiments, he received 20 years worth of his salary for his services to prosperity. So much for believing in the cause. Fortunately, he survived and escaped with Isabel, but a few days later he was arrested and will be put on trial next month. Kara finally had a funeral for her brothers. It was solemn, like all funerals, but we both knew that they died fighting for something they believed in. And now, we believed in it too. We celebrated later that month. We attempted the impossible, and, against all odds, we succeeded. A woman and a man celebrate in an apartment near the city. The lights of the short buildings are the brightest thing in the night sky, despite the staggering size of the stars hanging above the landscape thousands of light years away. No place is ever truly safe, but just for a moment, these two, in a New York apartment, were able to defy that rule. But not all is set right. There is one piece of the puzzle still missing, and they're about to find it. A knock at the door, soft and mushy like a boxing glove. The man, who is a detective, gets up to respond. He wasn't expecting a knock at all, but now he expects a letter at his doorstep. He's wrong. Instead, a figure stands in his doorway holding a note. The detective would call it a man if it weren't for his eyes, swirling and darting in oblivion. The detective steps back in fear, then steps forward in understanding. Like him, this is just a man with a riddled past. The detective and the mysterious man step inside, and the man pulls an envelope from his jacket. It's sealed with a familiar logo, and the detective begins to read. "My name is John Gruff," the letter reads. "I belonged to an organization known as Prosperity Psychological Institute, founded in 1892. 3 years ago, I was one of 13 test subjects for the first dose of Series 3, the chemical compound that modifies the brain for optimal control and manipulation. It was supposed to make me more focused. Instead, it made me erratic. Months after the first dose was administered, an incident occurred at our facility. All 13 of us were drastically changed when exposed to the catalyst known as pitch black. You've seen it on the bodies of murder victims. You know its purpose. When exposed to the catalyst, Series 3 altered our DNA and made us become inhuman in various different ways. Some of us can't see. Some, like me, are mute. Some of us gained incredibly sensitive hearing, and the compound formed our faces into unbearable twisted shapes. Not only did Series 3 degrade my physical appearance, it altered our minds. We became uncontrollable, even to ourselves. Like a monster, I could not control my sudden instinct to create chaos. We escaped from the facility and left a wake of pain in our various paths. I've seen news headlines of the other subjects, and it's not good. 5 men killed on a fishing vessel. Woman murdered in her apartment 2 months ago. Insanity may seem like an impossible barrier, but eventually, I was able to find focus within the chaos and set myself on one goal. Return to prosperity and shut down the experiments for good. But I soon realized that I needed help. With my current state, I could not interact with others for fear of threatening the only people who could help me. So I watched you, detective. I sent you letters telling you where to go. I sent the same letters to Dr. Klein as well in hopes of him contributing to the case. The letters you found in the department mail were meant for the chief, not Dr. Klein. I never anticipated the Luna's involvement, but when the three became curious with prosperity, I kept them on my radar. Kara's interest in the Institute after her brother's death prompted me to send the same letters to her as well, hinting at good life in the Institute. My involvement with prosperity led you to discover rifts in your own organization, and your experiences allowed you to move from the past to the future. You did well, Riley, but it is not finished. We have simply cut off one leg of the spider, but many more still remain. I need the help from both you and Kara to hunt down the other 12 subjects and pursue prosperity even further. There are countless people that want to be good, Riley, but there are few who choose to be good. What will you choose next? The detective finishes reading the letter and looks up. Where previously he saw a hostile creature, he now sees an old friend. He nods his head. Detective Richard Riley wasn't ready for this invitation, but a surprise seldom ends in disappointment. He looks to Kara, and then to the city skyline in the distance. The lights of the windows and the stars in the sky blink like bright eyes, barely but surely guiding the way through a pitch black night.